Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I'm your host, Abby Williams. Today, I'm welcoming on Emily Lawson, and she is from the Sandbox Academy, and we are talking about independent play. I know in talking to some of you guys over on my social media accounts, independent play is hard. I've struggled with it at times as a parent, and I know some of you guys have as well, so I'm excited about this episode. Today, Emily is here to talk to us about the importance of independent play. She talks to us about some tips to getting our children to play more independently, and she gives us some activities that we can set our kids up for a successful independent play experience. Her website has tons of resources. So does her Instagram and her Facebook. You can find all of that at Sandbox Academy. And she is offering some freebies. They will be linked in the description of this podcast. But she has 5 ways to play with magnet tiles. And she has a preschool activity guide. So those will be linked in the description. Make sure that you go give Emily a follow. And if you enjoy this episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me. And I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started. Cheers. So Emily, thank you so much for joining me on the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I am excited to talk to you today because I think so many moms struggle with getting their child to play independently. So I think that this is going to be a really great conversation. But first, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yes, definitely. I am a mom of 2. I'm a former teacher,
yeah,
turned mom, which is like age-old story. But when my daughter was 18 months, I left the classroom. Mm-hmm. And shortly, like right as she was turning 2, some of my friends started talking about enrolling their kids in preschool. And I was standing there in the conversation, kind of awkward, like, I just left my job. There's no way on earth that my husband's going to be like, sure, go
ahead. Yeah, you should also sign them up so you can stay home. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I noticed that out of a group of 6 of us, there was me and a few other girls who were kind of keeping back from the conversation. And so I turned to them and I was like, are you sending your kids? And they said, no. And I said, okay, I'm a teacher. I could totally do this for us. I can organize this. So that's how we got started. I told my husband, I'm going to write some lessons for my friends and we'll do it with our kids. He was like, why don't you just turn into a blog? Why don't you just, write it for everybody?
Right, right.
Sure, why not? I've got all this time on my hands. No problem.
Right.
So, yeah, and I have 2 kids. We live in California. We live on a farm, pretty much.
Yeah. Or
a little farm. We have 2.5 acres, and we're slowly building up our farm. We have our chickens. I'm working on Eric to get us a cow.
I love that. How much do the kids love that?
Oh my goodness. They love it. We have 3 dogs and they're obsessed with the dogs. My daughter is really pushing for a horse and I have money on how long I think it will take her to break her dad down. The more she gets that horse, she will get it. It's just a matter of how long it takes her to break my husband down.
Yeah. I love that. I think that animals are so good though for little ones.
And responsibility. They're learning.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you developed the Sandbox Academy, which is how you're helping parents and families cultivate kind of the importance of independent play with their children, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And kind of talk to us a little bit about that. What is the importance of independent play? How do we get our children there?
All the juicy questions.
Yeah.
So many benefits. I could go on, but the benefits of, let's start with the benefits of independent play. First is, I would say, problem solving. When our kids are playing by themselves, they are able to, problems occur, whether it be building blocks or social play. Something comes up and they have to figure out how to work through it. So they're probably working on that problem solving. When they're playing by themselves or I also count when they're playing with another kid as independent play, but basically those are not playing with an adult. I'm counting it as independent play.
Right.
But with studies show that when parent or when adults are involved in play, it really becomes adult driven and the kids aren't really driving that play anymore. The adult they're even if we think we're letting the kids drive the play, they're ultimately trying to do what they think will please us instead of just what how they want to play.
Yeah.
There's also tons of social emotional health or social emotional benefits. So like I was saying before, when your kid is playing with, you know, dolls or dollhouse, whatever, they are acting out. Sometimes they're acting out the things that you've said and you're like,
right. I know. And I think like, you know, that's why there's so much like research around why play therapy is so therapeutic, right? And that play can be so therapeutic to work through different traumas, to work through different situations, you know, different feelings. And so, I definitely agree with you.
And then the building that imagination as they create those different scenarios, or even like, you know, my son is definitely more STEM oriented. So, building requires a ton of imagination, and resilience. This was one I was just talking to a girlfriend about, that play is known for building up resilience. Mm-hmm. And as we think about the benefits as our kids grow, we want, obviously, as, you know, teenagers, we want our teenagers to be more resilient kids who are, you know, kind of okay with being bored. And it's kind of when teenagers start getting into trouble or being really peer pressured, a lot of it stems from not having self-confidence or and not being resilient. And so that independent play, even though it's really, you know, something we think of for our little kids, it has those benefits all the way up to our teenagers as they grow, and so that they're confident to say, nah, I'm going to do my thing, or not feel falling into that peer pressure, which was a new way for me to look at it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's like,
I know I haven't like thought about it like that at all,
but it's a whole new reason. The teen years scare me way more than the toddler years scare me. So
I totally agree. You know, I always like somebody at church or somewhere told me once, you know, like little people, little problems, big people, big problems. Right. And you're just like, so true.
Yes.
So true. And I mean like that peer pressure, and it's just like grown so much from when we were children, right? Yeah. You know, now they have like the social media and they have just so many more pressures on top of them that tie into that peer pressure thing. So what a great thing to be implementing when they're little, right? To carry over into.
Start developing those skills of resiliency and self-confidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it plays out differently when they're teens, but if we can start instilling it then, I mean, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And independent play also is another big benefit is the they learn to take risks. So when they're walking on a balance beam or a brick wall that they've turned into a balance beam, you know, those are all they're learning to take risks. And again, that translates to the older years where your risks aren't so much walking on a balance beam anymore, but you've developed that self-confidence to say,
go try it,
put myself out there and I'll try it, you know?
Yeah.
So those are our benefits.
And what are some tips to kind of get our children there, right? Okay.
So this is I feel like with everything in parenting, it's all about routine, you know, so establishing a routine of when are we going to play. So for us at our house, it's always been, we wake up and have TV time and breakfast. Then we do some sort of activity. And after the activity, they go into independent play and just kind of do their thing. And we also do that shortly after a nap. So we'll do nap activity, or now it's rest time. They're old. They don't nap anymore, but it requires those 2 hours of golden quiet in my house.
Yeah.
But then some sort of activity and then in straight into independent play. But they know like, okay, this is our routine. And during these times, I'm going to be expected to play by myself. And so establishing a routine would be my first thing. And then I have a stage 5 clinger who doesn't give me, you know, he is always on me. And who I just swatted away, my stage five clinger. But
I have one of those too.
Yeah. So for that, for him building up that independent play, he was pretty good at playing on his own, but he wanted me to be by him. He wanted to be next to him. So I just so we would do it slowly. We would start off playing together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, I'm going to go grab something from the kitchen real quick. I'll be right back. And I disappeared from the room for 2 minutes. Came back and sat and played with him. And slowly that time got bigger and bigger and bigger to where he was like, okay, I can just sit here and play. Not a problem.
Right.
But so it's baby steps. It's establishing a routine. And then my big one, which is what my bread and butter here, is activities. I set up some sort of activity for my kids. A lot of times they're learning activities or like a sensory bin. And usually my daughter will finish the activity perfectly and then be like, all right, I'm going to go do my own thing. My son gets about 65% of the way through before he's like, yeah, this is just like, I'm over it. I'm going to go. But when he's over it, he's not turning to me and saying like, okay, what's next? He's just like, so we're in the playroom. I'm over this little thing you set up, Mom. That's cool for you, but I'm going to go grab the Legos. And it naturally and organically turns into independent play. And I don't touch it. Like, there is nothing in me that is like, oh no, come back. We're going to finish this activity. No. Go for it. Enjoy. If you're interested in the activity, we'll come back to it later.
Right.
But for independent play is where they learn more. They learn what they're interested in learning about, and it's more organic learning. So I embrace that far more than like the number activity that I set up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So those would be my three tips for getting them to start playing independently is setting up a consistent routine. Backing away slowly if you have one of those stage five clingers.
Right.
And then setting up some sort of activity. I'm going to share a few of my favorites, but they're quick. I've tried the super Pinteresty prepping for our day. And I couldn't keep up with it.
I don't really feel like that's like the norm. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think like we all wish that we were like these Pinterest moms, and there are some moms that thrive so much on like being creative like that. Yeah. And you have like all this creative mojo that you need to like pour into something, and your motherhood like fills that cup. But like, oh my goodness, the majority of us, I do not feel like we identify with being that mom.
And I thought I would be that mom.
I know. And then
I had a second child, and then I was trying to share it, do it with my kid and share it with everybody else. And I was like, we're gonna change our style here a bit. But yeah, so they're the simple activities really have driven our independent play and getting us ready. I'm rambling a little bit.
No, you're fine. So now the Sandbox Academy has become a thing for you.
Yes.
You are sharing these ideas with other families. How are you sharing these? What are you sharing? And what are some of the ideas that parents can be using to connect with their children?
Awesome. I'll start with what kind of the things that we share. So the primary, it's preschool-based activities. So thinking about kindergarten prep and, which I hate that term because I really think kindergarten prep should be more about social emotional stuff. But
yeah,
I also get that everybody wants their kid to be successful in kindergarten. So there is the academic kindergarten prep. The blog also includes a lot of arts and crafts, but simple arts and crafts. Because like I said, I tried the fancy arts and crafts, and I was doing all the preschool projects. My kids were looking at me like, did you have fun, mommy? Like, I didn't do any of that.
Right.
And then we also, I like to incorporate a lot of STEM. So for those of you who aren't familiar with STEM, it's science, technology, engineering and math. And then.
Are those like the sensory bin kind of activities?
I would include sensory and bins in STEM. And then also a lot of building.
Yeah.
So a lot of, one of my favorite building activities is to use plastic cups. And
yeah.
I literally give my kids, you know, the little party plastic cups, solo cups. And we've done a few different things with it. One of them is how tall of a tower can you build?
Yeah.
We've done bowling with that. We have similar to bowling, but that's throwing, like trying to knock over a tower. And then like if we've added popsicle sticks.
Yeah.
So I just put out, you know, literally my setup for the day is a stack of cups and a jar, or, you know, a jar of popsicle sticks, and tell my kids, can you build? And we've built bridges using that. So you put all the different cups out there and then attach them using the popsicle sticks. The kids get really creative with it. And
yeah,
my prep was that 2-minute setup, or not even, to just grab the materials and put them on the table and say, this is what we're doing today.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the educational activity. So a lot of times that's me grabbing a big piece of butcher paper and drawing, although my drawing skills are quite rough. So drawing skills are not necessary, but drawing some sort of setup, you know, maybe a ladybug with the number 6 on her head, and you need to add 6 dots to her belly to, you know, to make her an actual ladybug. And doing that for a variety of numbers. And then I've also really started bringing in baking and cooking with my kids and trying to bring them into the kitchen. So I've shared a lot of that as well. And it is recipes, again, like the crafts that the kids can't do on their own. I've tried to go towards recipes that kids can actually do. We have a set of really cool kids' knives at home that the kids can then like cut up fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Getting them familiar with the kitchen. I think a lot of learning through play and independent play comes through not just the academic or the toys, but also just our environment and nature and being in the kitchen and those real life skills. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. And are you like fostering this like independent play outside as well?
Oh, yes. Oh my goodness.
Probably it's like really great. It's being on a farm with like a lot of different, you know, places, like land to roam on, right?
Yeah. So we have a 2-acre backyard where it's just like, okay, go here, take the, they have a toy Jeep that my mom got at a garage sale for like $25. And I'm like, explore.
See you later. Right. Are there different like tools, toys, things that you recommend to be using for outside play that really like foster this creativity, the imagination, the problem solving, you know, all these like fun things?
Honestly, the best place to get the supplies is the kitchen section at the Dollar Tree.
Yeah.
Or the party section, the cute cookie cutters, or my kids are big on to making potions. So they go outside a lot and make potions or stews. And I have very sensory driven kids.
Right.
And so I do have the fancy water table, but that is played it was played with for a while when we weren't living in the farm, the farm. But now that we live out in the country, a big bucket of water goes a lot, is way more interesting to them with like a turkey baster and measuring cups and tongs. That $20 in the Dollar Tree kitchen section will do you wonders beyond those fancy toys. And the fancy toys are great, and they're a great way to get started if you're kind of like, I'm not quite so sure what to do. And we've had to reestablish some boundaries of, you know, the bowls that are outside from the Dollar Tree are yours. And the ones that are in my kitchen that we cook with, like, let's leave those inside. So if you would like a more clear, distinct boundary, I get it. But yeah, I think just, I mean, it's like age old where the kids are playing with the pots and pans and all the Tupperware and stuff. Mm-hmm. Giving them some of that real basic stuff to go outside and play with. My kids love a squirt bottle, like just like the normal, ones you put cleaner in, the spray bottles. They'll go spray a tree. They'll go spray. We do have a swing set back there. They'll go spray the swing set, and they'll take all the patio furniture and make a big obstacle course. So they are pretty creative on their own. I actually think if you're struggling with independent play, that going outside is one of those, one of the most amazing tools you can do.
I think so too.
There's something magical when we step out into our backyard that my kids are no longer looking at me to entertain them, and they're
okay. They go run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're okay.
No, I agree. Cause I mean, like, you know, thinking back to when we got like locked down when the pandemic first started, and here in Cincinnati, it was cold, it was rainy, it was gray, it was horrible to be like locked down here. And then like slowly, you know, we were inching our way into springtime, things were getting warmer, and we had been like cooped up in this house, right? We had nowhere to go. And I could like finally like shove my kids out the back door. I felt like, you know, like now it's like warmer, it's drier, you know, it's not a giant mud pit in my backyard, so you guys can go. But we don't have a swing set in our backyard. We have a trampoline. That's like it. You know, we're on the go. We're a family that likes to go to the park and go do things. Yeah. And so, you know, when we were confined here to our house and our yard, we had to get creative.
Yeah.
And there was, so we have like a spot in the back, like corner of our yard where there's a bunch of trees. And so the grass doesn't really grow very well. So it like turns into like a giant mud pit. My dogs like to run through it when it's raining and then truck in all the mud. It's a wonderful, wonderful situation for my home. I love it so much. But, you know, my kids got so much use out of the dirt, the mud pile back there during that time when we were here, you know, where I would give them like the shovels out of like the beach bag. They would just like have like beach toys. They go out there. They had like their trucks and their cars. Like, I don't even care if they get money. Like, just go, like go do stuff. And so they would build like these little, like, I guess like roads, you know, they'd like shovel them out and like build like their little village, and they'd, you know, do their cars. I didn't facilitate this at all. I just literally was like, get out of my house. You guys are driving me so crazy. We have nowhere to go. You know, I've been just like here with you people. You know, I don't have any help right now. Like, you guys need to get out of my house and like go do something. And so, you know, just like opening the back door and letting them do that, like it did. They just went, and it wasn't like, well, what are we supposed to do out here? There's not a swing set. You know what I mean? They just completely went for it and created this thing. And it was so much fun. It was fun to watch them do that. We also have a nature center near us, which is like hiking trails and stuff. And they have like a kids area where there's just like a bunch of logs, and these kids just like drag around these logs. And it's fun, like when there's not the pandemic going on, and you'll like come across other families and all the kids are like playing out there. But they build like little like cabins out of all these logs that are out there, and they have like different pots and pans that are out there that kids can like play in the mud in. And, you know, so yeah, just like the kitchen stuff and letting kids just like tear stuff up outside. Like, they love it. Like, dig a hole. Like, my kids were like digging holes in that mud pit. I'm like, I don't care, you know, I can't grow grass back there.
Right.
It's not a nice part of the yard. Yeah. It would drive my husband like crazy, because he's like, it's just gonna fill up with water when it rains. I'm like, don't care.
Our yard is not, it's not a Better Homes and Gardens yard.
Right.
And I am in the stage where I'm like, I think I can embrace that for a few more years. As when they get older and, you know, they want to go lay out by a pool and jump on a trampoline, we'll embrace that. But right now, the dirt pit, I don't care that they have holes all, that there's craters all over my backyard.
Yeah.
Because they're outside, they're getting vitamin D, they're not standing next to me.
Right. somebody that I know that's like further on in their motherhood journey said to me once, you know, like, you're growing children, not grass. Like, let the kids like beat up your yard, you know, like, let them be kids. So every time my husband's like, they're tearing up the yard, I'm like, we're growing children, we're not growing grass. He's like, can't we do both? I'm like, probably not. It's just probably not doable right now. We've got too many kids. But no, so I love that. I think that, you know, this independent play is so important, and it's good for their little brains. It's good for their development. It's good for learning. It's good for so many different things.
And go ahead.
No, you're fine.
I was gonna say, and there's so many ways to, like you said, you were talking about how you didn't facilitate play at all. And there's, I mean, obviously my whole blog is about ways to
facilitate it.
But there are, some of them are more hands-on than others. Some of them are like an activity. Sometimes I just pull out a puzzle that we haven't touched in a long time. And even when my kids were really little, like the big chunky puzzles, but they haven't played with it. Sometimes it is sort of taking a toy that they haven't seen in a while and putting it on the play table. And all of a sudden it is like the newest, latest and greatest thing. It's like Christmas all over again. So facilitating it can be a whole variety of levels, you know?
Yeah. And so many people have, like, I think that that's why people do like the toy rotations, right? Like, I wish I was that kind of mom that could get on the toy rotation. And like, there's really no reason not to be. I guess time is my reason.
We do rotate.
Are you do the toy rotation? But like, I have like the space, like, because some people are like, oh, I don't have like the storage to be able to.
No, I have the storage.
Store away. You know, it's just all in one spot. Like, I do have the space to be able to store it.
But I drag my feet on it every, like, in my head, we do it monthly.
Yeah.
But that doesn't actually happen. Mm-hmm. And then the kids will be like, can we change toys? Can we change toys? And
maybe tomorrow.
Setting up my brain before I actually commit to it.
Is it a whole ordeal, the toy rotation?
I try to let them be involved in it, which is what makes it a whole ordeal versus more just to do it. Cause everything is well, or like our house is pretty, I have a lot of storage and, it's well organized. So it's really just changing out bins and stuff. But I require them to like, you pick what we put away and you pick what we take out. And so it's more wrapping my brain around facilitating of it. That's the hard part of the patience to knowing that I could do it in 2 minutes and get on and move on, and it's gonna be best 30 minutes doing it with them, but they need to learn how to, not necessarily how to rotate toys, but how to do anything, you know.
Yeah. So Emily, just like touch on again, for like the parents who are struggling just getting their child to play independently, can you kind of go over, I guess, like what like the tricks or tips are just one more time of getting our kid there?
Yes. I'll read over the tips and then I'll give you a handful of activities to get that you could do tomorrow or today. But so the first thing would be to establish some sort of routine. So every day after nap, every day, whatever the routine is for you, it's every day at X time, my kid knows that we are going to do independent play. And then if they are, you know, kind of hesitant, resistant to it, to break it into small chunks. So backing away slowly. So start by playing with them, go run to change a load of laundry and come back, and slowly over time, building that up. My kids, I would say now they play independently for two hours.
Yeah.
And that is together independently, but the two of them together, not me. I'm not involved.
Right.
But we, you know, it started at 10 minutes was a big victory when you're first getting started.
Right.
Which I think that's something that might.
I think that's a really good, like, tangible piece of advice, though, because I think like so many parents get hung up on my kid like wants me to play with them, and now I've like created this monster because I don't like playing. Maybe I've got other things to do. You know, like there's so many different reasons why we can't just sit there and play with them all day, right?
Right.
And I think that that's like setting just such like a realistic perspective of the backing away, you know, like today I'm going to back away for 10 minutes and tomorrow it might be 15, you know what I mean? And like that there is like light at the end of the tunnel.
And even my big kids who are good at independent play,
yeah,
knowing that there is an established time where I also am with them, even if it's not play, it's crafting or whatever it is. But I have taken that 20 minutes already to fill their cup, or they know that 20 minutes is, you know, they know that time is coming with me, that one-on-one time with me, or time as the three of us. So having both established, both the independent play and the time with mom or dad, whoever, so that they aren't they know that both buckets are going to be filled, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really important. Yeah.
And then the last one would be, that's a big deal in our house, is setting up some sort of activity. So we establish, sometimes I do them at night, sometimes I do it during their rest time, but when they come out of their room, or I mean, sometimes I also, let's be honest, I'm doing it while they're watching TV and I'm like quickly scrambling to throw something together. I'm not always prepared enough to have it the night before. But some sort of simple activity that's on the table that we get started. Sometimes they're learning more sensory or art, and then we're working on that together, and they slowly either finish the activity and move on, or just lose interest in my activity and move on. And I think that's a hard one for parents too. I hear a lot of them, like a lot of moms saying, you know, I don't want to spend time setting up an activity if they're not going to complete it. You know, I don't, why did I bother? Which was a big reason why I switched to those simpler activities, because I did have that hang up of, I spent like 10 minutes cutting all this stuff out for you and you're not interested.
Right, that is I know, but I feel like I'm kind of like on the flip side, where, you know, when I'm like at my wit's end and like I need you guys to like go play independently and like give me a break, I'm like, just go play something, right?
Yes.
And like, then they're not, because they don't know what to go do, you know? So like, there's that also, that's like a problem.
Yes. And I've had that moment, my kids, where they look at me like, we don't have anything to play with. And I'm like,
really? A whole room full of toys. Like, get out of here.
Two children's bedrooms that are filled to the brim. Right. What do you mean?
Right.
That's where.
But that's like overwhelming when there's so many choices. Yeah. It's overwhelming for children to then decide, you know, what to be doing. So I think like helping them navigate that by having an activity that they can do. And maybe they do like abandon that activity, but like you have established that this is the independent play time. So they might like abandon that activity, but then like, oh, actually we want to go play cars instead. And whatever, just get out of here.
I embrace it. Like, don't fight the fact that they're abandoning. Don't get your feelings hurt that they abandoned this thing that took you a minute to set up.
Right.
Embrace the fact that they're like, I'm going to go play and you leave you here.
Right.
Whatever you want to do, mom.
Yeah.
So one, I would say, so if you're looking for some things to set up that like, okay, where do, so cool activities sound great. What do they actually look like?
Right.
Sensory, we talked about sensory bins. I have two water sensory bins that I love. One is I fill a bucket with water, and then if you have toy animals, kind of throw toy animals in there, and then like pouch caps or bottle lids or any little pieces that seem like trash, and have your kids clean the water to, you know, rescue the animals by saving, pulling out all the water or the caps, whatever. You could use tongs to add in fine motor skills so that they're using tongs to pick out all those little bottle caps. Another one would be to fill a bunch of like plastic bottle. Again, I put a big sensory bin underneath us to capture messes. But I'm also a believer that using water for sensory bins means that if a mess happens, I have to then just use a towel and then my floors are mopped. So we're good to go.
Right.
A large sensory bin filled with a bunch of little cups. Some have water, some don't. And then they can just practice pouring. So That's working on those fine motor, you know, as a mom, I'm think mom, teacher brain's thinking, okay, we're working on fine motor skills. We're learning how to pour something while it's not at the, you know, dinner table that we're learning how, and when they make a mistake and it's all over everybody's meal, instead it's in a sensory bin that's going to catch the mess and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But they have. And my kids think it's just the greatest thing to be able to take a book, to take a jar of water and pour it into the next one, take it up to the next level by putting different colors, food colorings in there, and then mix, you know, they can experiment with mixing different colors. But so it's really, it's simple stuff. Another one I like to do is I take a big piece of butcher paper and I draw a rainbow.
Yeah.
And then I take out all of their play food, you know, from their kitchen. And ask them to just match it based on the color, but, you know, making this pretty rainbow, and they're sorting their play food into the shape of a rainbow. And it's real basic. There's, you know, I drew a rainbow and I took food out of the toy kitchen.
Right. But
that got them working on matching skills. They were working on color identification, sorting, and 9 out of 10 times, then they're like, okay, let's go play something with all this. You know, we've taken all this toy food out. Now let's go play kitchen. You know, I'm going to set up a toy restaurant, whatever. That it has led so naturally, and it took me 2 minutes to set it up. And yeah. I, as a mom, am thinking like, okay, we knocked out all these skills. They were thinking we were just playing with our toys and organizing our toys. And then mom's little activity was cool and all, but we're going to move on to actually playing and creating.
Right.
So yeah, the simpler, the better for me. I love to use magnetiles.
Yeah.
We have a big magnetile fan, and using those, I started with preschoolers. My daughter is now a kindergartner and we're navigating school.
I know.
Because California is all funky. But so we've done magnetiles where just, you know, matching color, or I've laid out, which I think I have this blog post and I sent, I'll share the link with you if I haven't already. But yeah. It was 5 different activities with magnetiles. One is sorting by shape. Another would be to put like one of each color down. And then ask your kids to go on a hunt throughout the playroom, or better yet, ask them to go on a hunt throughout the living room and find all the toys that they've left in the living room.
Yeah.
Collect those, aka clean up your living room, bring them back and sort them based on the color, with the magnetile, different colored magnetiles being like the lead or the label.
Yeah.
So now you've cleaned up your living room and sorted all these toys by color and created, and if they line them up, this can be a little more advanced, but if they line them all up perfectly, then you can kind of graph them and look at them as a graph to see which one had the most.
Yeah.
And then what was the other? Taking those magnetiles around the house and seeing like, is something magnetic or not? Testing all the areas of your house, like door hinges are one that you wouldn't, it's a surprising one to kids, you know, that all of a sudden in the middle of a door, there's something magnetic, you know, the refrigerator, that's an obvious one. And testing those kinds of things out, and then giving them, you know, can you build a house? Can you build a shape? Can you build a rectangle using 2 triangles? And different things like that, you know, my kids will engage with me. They'll do those activities. And then again, it slowly fades out. And my son is always the first one to say, can I just build? Can I just build with these? And, yup, surely can. Like,
yeah,
you've accomplished everything you need to accomplish. And now we are moving into that independent play to get it started. And we're using what they already have. You know, I do go out because I still have that teacher in me that that buys all the things.
Yeah, you need the supplies. Yeah.
But I try really hard to focus on using what we already have at home, because I know that if my family has it at home, most families also do. And they can not have to have two closets full of school supplies.
Well, it's probably coming in handy right now, being in a pandemic and actually like homeschooling, you know, even if that's not the route that maybe you were hoping to be taking. I know, it's like, what a weird time, huh? Yeah. Emily, tell my listeners where they can find you.
You can find me on sandboxacademy.com or on Instagram looking up Sandbox Academy. I forgot to tell you, oh my goodness. So all these ideas that I just threw out at you, yeah, and you hopefully wrote down really fast while I was talking. I have a book put together called the Preschool Playbook that has all of these really well organized by theme and written out real simple for you. There's more academic pieces to it if you want, if you're just looking for a quick, like, get my kids started on with an activity, you could use the book for that too. But so I have the Preschool Playbook with all these ideas written down and organized for you.
Perfect. I'll be linking all of those things in the description of this podcast, so make sure that you guys go look for that. And Emily, thank you so much for joining me, and cheers to a more independent playtime.
Yes, we're going into it right now.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.